pleasure and an honor for our committee, Foreign Affairs Committee, to receive you. As we have seen it from your curriculum, it's a life devoted to the development cooperation. When I was in government in 2002 and 2003, I have a very good relation to the Ministry of Development Cooperation of Netherlands, Agnes van der Ven, your successor. I went with her to Tanzania from the Great Lakes conflict, and she was revoked. She was not there anymore, Minister.
No, Agnes.
In the Parliament? Okay. No. After two women. Yes, I know that. Okay. So may I present my commission, my vice president, Paulino Coutinho, a former member of government. On my left side, the coordinator of the Social Democratic Party, now in your position. It happens time to time. Dr. Edna Field for the Frank from the Socialist, Joanna Martin, Joanna Lima also for the Socialist Party. And the Socialist Party always on my left and wing side. We are surrounded of socialists everywhere in this committee. That's normal, that's the majority. From time being, yes. We are very well. As you know, I think we're going to change some points of view on methods of development cooperation. This committee has a very strong relation with government in this matter. We made an effort to fulfill all development, millennium development goals. As you know, we put an emphasis, a big one, in our bilateral cooperation in sub-Saharan African countries, those countries who speak Portuguese. The major donors of our ODA, as you know, is East Timor, for reasons you know very well, and then Mozambique, and then Cape Verde, Angola, São Tomé, and last Guinea-Bissau. We emphasize our ODA in health, education, government, and civil society. And I can say that there is an overall consensus by all parties that the political development cooperation is a very important one. And although we change governments, we make the same policy. That's a good example of a consensus in foreign policy. So we are waiting for your exposé, and I hope you will achieve your goals. I have here one of your sentences. I quote, "My feeling is that the Millennium Development Goals are achievable. It's not an economic problem that we are dealing with. It's a problem of political will. Do you find political will among you, governments?" That's my question. And thank you a lot for coming.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's nice to be in a country which, like mine, there is consensus about development, and frankly, it doesn't make that much of a difference who is in government. You know, that's by itself very important, that there's a broad consensus. Let me also say that I'm very happy to be here. I've been a parliamentarian myself for almost 10 years, and I always love being in parliament again. And actually, I've been by now in all EU 15 parliaments I've given speeches. But I also like to be in parliaments because you say political will. That's your job. That's what you are about. And it is really parliament in democracies that hold the purse and set the laws of the land. So I think you're the most powerful constituency to actually talk to, because the Millennium Development Goals are actually about holding governments to the account for the promises they made. And it is exactly parliaments that can do so. It's your job. And one of the things that I really would want to say here, that when I was a parliamentarian holding my government to account on these issues, I think the most powerful instrument we have is actually these OECD Development Assistance Committee peer reviews. You know, every country is, you know, the feet are held to the fire once every few years. And I always felt, when I was a parliamentarian, I was most of the time in opposition, it was a gold mine of information to give tools to parliamentarians to ensure that their government would do better. So using that document as a source of a debate, debate that document and use it when you have debates holding your government to account, I think is very important. Second example of what parliaments can do, and for instance, we do that very much in the Netherlands and the United Kingdom does that too, is that development is not just only talking with your development state secretary. That development is very much about coherence of other policies. And as you know, we as Europeans had that already in the Maastricht Treaty, or was it the Amsterdam Treaty already, that, you know, all our policies should actually be coherent and consistent with our objectives with development. So this is also about other issues. I want to talk a little bit today about Goal 8, because we can talk a lot about these first 7 goals, but the essence of the Millennium Development Goals are that this is a global partnership in which we all acknowledge that it's the developing country's primary responsibility to achieve these first 7 goals. And whenever I hold speeches in developing countries, I insist we're not going to talk about what rich countries are doing or not doing. It's your responsibility. You have to improve your governance. You have to put your own budget in order. You have to raise your own domestic resources. You have to fight corruption. You have to ensure that you give sufficient priority to education, basic health, etc. You have to act transparent. You should allow civil society and your parliament to hold you to account. So that's the primary responsibility. But with Goal 8, we all agreed that the poor countries, and particularly those in sub-Saharan Africa, simply will not be able to do it by themselves. That there is some things that we rich countries have to deliver if we want to achieve these goals. We have to play our part. And playing our part is basically 3 issues. Increasing aid, improving the quality of aid, but also trade issues. And I don't want to talk too long about trade issues because you're not the committee dealing with this. But let me just say, you know, I'm a big fan of Mozambique. I think that's one of the best success stories in Africa. But there's one big problem. Mozambique is doing well on all these social indicators. But the growth, economic growth, was not really pro-poor, not labor-intensive. And the reason why is that agriculture, the sector where pro-poor growth is most possible, is not really developing. And one of the issues here is that as long as we, Europe, have agriculture policies that don't allow Mozambique to grow sugar and process it and export it to us, there's not going to be that type of demand to the agriculture sector that will allow people to lift themselves out of poverty. And 2/3 of the world's poor live in rural areas. They depend on agriculture. So unless we rich countries change our agriculture policies. And one of the things that I don't understand as a former politician is a lot of people in Europe are not even aware that the average European family actually pays 100 euro a month, which is a lot of money for an average European family, to actually subsidize our agriculture sector, which is less than 2 or 1% of our population, and in most countries, not even the poorest part. And the way the present agriculture policies work are not helping our poor farmers or our environment. So, you know, I know this is not the right committee, but raising these issues of coherence, I think, is as important. Now, so that's the trade issue. On the quantity of aid, I don't have to spell out the figures. I'm sure you know. And I was very pleased to see, I mean, I was really disappointed, of course, because this government, when I met people in government here, when they just, like, were really committed to do it. But then, of course, last year, you filled the 0.33 and of 1 out of 3 of the EU 15 that did so. And I'm pleased to see that the government is now committed to actually try to really make that 2010 0.51, which is really a minimum. The average, country average of the European Union is already 0.51 last year. So catching up here is very important. But to do that credibly, you can't sit back and relax until 2010. I mean, what the EU asked you to do, what the OECD has asked you to do, is now already come with a credible time frame. Every year increases to actually keep this commitment. Now, I know it's hard fighting for a budget. Done it myself for a very long, long time. But this is, again, just about it's about political will. And if all you, all of you, in your own parties, in your own party group, would fight to make this a priority, I'm sure it should be feasible. It should be feasible. But again, it's political will, and it's where you come in. But let me add that I really don't want to talk too long about the quantity, because I actually believe that raising the amount of money, frankly, if I would be a parliamentarian, I wouldn't even feel comfortable doing that if I not at the same time would have a very serious effort to increase the quality of aid. Because, you know, you go to your taxpayers and say, you know, you spend more on that. You want to be able to explain that that money is really being spent on where your taxpayers, your electorate, clearly wanted to be spent on producing poverty in poor countries. And here is where the OECD DAC peer review comes in, and it is a very serious report about all the issues of quality that bug the Development Cooperation of Portugal. Now, there's one thing that you're fantastic at, and that is your focus on the poorest countries. Most of the parliaments, all other parliaments that I address, I have to make a long speech about the fact of money leaking away to middle-income countries for geopolitical reasons that don't need any outside help to achieve these goals. So you're great on that. But there are a lot of other issues which that OECD report spells out, and I just want to mention a few of these. One of these is that you still tie some of your aid to procurement of Portuguese goods and services. Now, this tying of aid is really undercutting the quality. It is reducing the value with it. It is corruption prone. It's about a little part of your budget, and I really, it would be a wonderful step to just say, let's totally untie, as some of the other EU members are doing already. Now, the other issue is, and this is a very serious one in terms of explaining to your electorate that this aid is being used well, it's the lack of integration of the Millennium Goals in the implementation, the lack of poverty focus in the implementation, and the most obvious sector to show what the problem is the education sector. You know that a large part of your development budget goes to education, but not to help the poorest countries to achieve Millennium Goal 2, education for all. It goes to scholarships. It goes to technical assistance. But particularly scholarships, you want the cost of one scholarship. You can actually send hundreds of kids to primary school for it. So it is a diversion, anti-poverty focus, very costly at the expense of much better users. And according to studies and evaluations and according to the OECD, actually it's an anti-development spending as far as it leads to brain drain, et cetera, et cetera. So looking into this issue of how can you create, you know, use that budget for education to actually really focus it on the main goals and poverty, I think is an important example of where the quality issue can be tackled. But there's a third issue that I want to raise about quality and effectiveness of aid. And this is an issue which is not a particular Portuguese issue. This is a point I raise with every parliament where I talk to. And this is the whole way that we donors tend to think that has to change. We have way too much, and maybe the Dutch are the worst traditionally, of knowing better. And we have to start to realize that we don't develop them. They develop themselves. And this is a very important change that we need to make in our attitude. Our role is not running things there. Our role is enabling governments in Africa to take their responsibility. That was the agreement of the Millennium Goals. It's their primary responsibility. And that means a radical change in the way we think about it. We should stop thinking about Dutch projects or Portuguese projects. These are Mozambique's programs and policies that we're supporting. And this whole traditional aid paradigm, with the emphasis on technical cooperation, and you know Portugal does a lot in technical cooperation, actually, I find, if I'm really candid and honest about this, as a very bad way of sort of confirming this myth of Western superiority. You know, like, we give, you take. We lecture, you listen. We know, you don't. So we take care because you can't. And this whole attitude, and again, this is not particularly directed towards Portugal, because the first place I started to make these speeches was in the Netherlands, where for 50 years we did this wrong. And we were undercutting the responsibilities of Africans for their own development. And with the way we run that, we also undercut the government's accountability to their own citizens. Because you will not get good governance in Africa unless citizens demand from their own governments to act, instead of looking at the paymasters, us, for delivery of basic rights like education and health. So we, the donor community, have to change that attitude. And it becomes even more important. Like 30 years ago, there were 10 donors. Now there are 100 of only official donors. So the we here is 100 different entities, with all their own hobbies, with all their own requirements for procedures, priorities, etc., etc., bothering these recipients. And I fully agree with, I think, João Favinho once said, and let me quote him, that the most important reason that a lot of development cooperation failed in the past is because of this fragmented, uncoordinated, supply-driven bilateral interventions. And he is so right that the typical model of aid in the past was that we all came in and run a little project. So you have this ocean of misery in Africa, and we created the perfect island of heaven and happiness. But the moment our experts and our funding withdrew, it collapsed, because nobody ever wondered, when we built our school or hospital, who's going to pay for the teachers? Who's going to pay for the nurses? And when we leave, it collapses. The only way to get sustainable education and health in developing countries is that governments take their own responsibility for it, and we actually support them to take that. In the meantime, we burdened very weak institutional capacity there with all our different demands for different procedures, for procurement, for accounting, for evaluation, et cetera, leaving these people without the time and energy to run their own country. And then you've got all these development ministers coming by for a photo opportunity, not for nothing that Tanzania asked the donors, can we have 3 months a year mission free so we can focus on creating our own budget and our own things. Now, in the case of Portugal, of course, it's not even one donor. According to the OECD DUG report, it's like hundreds different of ministries, local authorities, universities that recipient officials have to deal with. So actually consolidating that, as is now the plan to do, and make IPAT responsible for the all of the SOA, I think is a fantastic thing to do. Now the good news about all this is that finally the donors understood that they are part of the problem, that they have to now become part of the solution. So you watched went to the Rome conference still. Okay. Paris also, no, Paris was too hard already. So finally they have this wonderful plan, donors work together, back homegrown strategies, align yourself, harmonize your procedures, etc. And there is some action now coming. But for Portugal to join the action, you really have to strengthen, professionalize IPAS, help with delegating to the field, create field offices or let your embassies do it, I don't care, to be part of the local donor community to do this alignment and harmonization. And I think the strategy paper, strategic vision, is very good, and I was pleased to hear that it was broadly endorsed, as I understood, by Parliament. But now the next step is getting a vision implemented. You know, vision without implementation is hallucination. So that next step should really be made. And actually, the OECD DAC report advises Portugal, as long as you haven't done that, once your aid starts increasing, rather put that in multilateral channels to ensure that that is being spent well. Now, let me summarize my point. So what the Millennium Declaration and the global view actually mean for donors and recipients, let me compare it with the division of labor between the driver in the car and the passengers in the car. So what that deal means is that we are the passengers, the donors, and we would allow the country, the recipient, in the driver's seat. Of course, we can check the license of the driver. Do they have a decent poverty reduction strategy or a Millennium Development Goal plan, whatever they name it? Fine. If they have that, we should keep our hands off the wheel. And we should stop giving conflicting advice, like one passenger having a map in miles, another map with kilometers, or one passenger, the British, would say, drive on the left side of the lane, and the other said, no, the right side. So we should stop the conflicting advice and irrelevant conditionality. We can pay a fair share of the gas for the car, 0.7%. But we can't insist that it should be Shell or Chevron. We cannot tithe our aid. Then can we sit back and relax? No, we also have to help the suspension system of the car lift the debt burden. And please don't count it as aid. But we also have to help these passengers with clearing the road for the driver. And clearing the road means not only doing away with the outdated aid conditionalities and modalities that we created, but particularly helping with taking away the fallen trees and boulders that we put there in the first place on the trade issue. Break down the walls around our markets, which make it impossible or hard for poor producers to sell their goods on our rich consumer markets. So that's what we should be doing. And if we respect that division of labor, we're halfway now in 2007, we should still be able to achieve the goals. Because what I'm very excited about is that even in Africa, which on average is lagging enormously, you've got at least 10 countries that are on track for several of the goals. Mozambique is one of them, but there are 10 others at least that are going to make the education goal or some of the health goals. And these are some of the poorest countries. And the secret of the success story is time and time again that these countries lived up to their promises. They, in fact, reformed their policies. They are fighting corruption. They're putting their own money where their mouth is. And these countries actually have benefited from the fact that at least some of the donors are living up to their promise. They receive debt relief and receive aid supporting and backing their plans. So if both parties live up to their promises, we can do it. But we at the United Nations can create the platform of the conferences where government leaders make the most wonderful speeches and promises. But we cannot send the police to Finland when it doesn't live up to a 0.7. So it's only you, the parliament, that can hold the government to account. But if you do so, and the political will is there, these goals are still achievable. So I'm counting on you to do your part. Thank you.
Thank you very much. After listening to you, I know very well why Mr. Kofi Annan has appointed you executive coordinator of this campaign. Before opening the floor, I want to present you Mr. Vera Jardim, member of the Socialist Party, former Minister of Justice, and one of the most remarkable lawyers in our country. And at the same time, Mr. Tom Correa from the CDSPP, Conservative, he was a former Vice President of the Assembly, notable MP. So I open the floor and I give to my vice president.
Thank you. I think that things are changing very much in Portugal. We used to have all that OECD is saying in his peer review. I think there is a will to change that, a will to focus on the objectives of Millennium Goals, of course, a will to increase the aid. But of course, there are problems. There are financial problems. Most of all, there are all machines that are there, and that they don't use to act. So, but I think that now clearly there is the speech in our government is just the same as you did. So I think that the will is there. Of course, in Portugal, people are emphasizing very much on the Portuguese-speaking country. For, of course, it fits with the goals of the millennium because most of them are very poor countries, with the exception of Cape Verde, but where the head of Portugal, yes, Brazil, you're not here, but they are two very successful countries anyway. So, and I think that one of the lessons that we take from Cape Verde is that they, even 30 years ago, they didn't use their aid just to give for nothing for people, but they sell the aid to have some public work going on in the country and to have employment. So I think that the way some countries use their aid is also making the difference sometimes, which is also, I think it will be sometimes very useful to show to all countries the good experiences that are there in different countries. And sometimes, as we have this donor point of view, we don't valorize what the successful countries out there have been doing and how different they are from each other and how successful some experiences were and the others don't. So I think that what something that is also very useful is to emphasize and to give them back this knowledge of everybody knowing that they are having good experiences. I think it's something very, very important. Of course, in Portugal, we focus very much on our language, which is normal. And I think it's also a link in this country. I think that it has been recognized in all these countries that the language is also very useful for governance, because most of them are speaking very different languages, but also for education, to have a common platform, which is not sometimes is not so easy to have. So I think that this focus in the language is very useful for the Millennium Goals. But what I'm sure is that the political will of all the parties is that we keep this language focus on our orientation, our aid, and our strategic. I think that I think that a lot of things have been changed, not always with very good success at the first time, because it's not so easy to do. But I think that we are not doing that, even if the aid is still very small. But what I have, I can recognize, is that there is a political will to change it very, very. And I think that we can see in this budget that we are just discussing now that for next year there are some promises of new development that we foresee can be very, very important. So, of course, at this point of view, we very much agree on your speech. It's exactly the same that we have. On the second hand, what you have said about trade and especially agriculture, I think is also something that Portugal can be on your side, because we are donors in the agriculture. So I think that we would this change in the EU policy, giving less money and less focus on aiding our agriculture, is something that Portuguese people will back, because of course they are not benefiting of it on the country. So, but of course there is there an issue that is much more global with the United States and so on, so it's not such an easy way. But I very much agree with you that this is even more important than the egg, because of course the egg is something that is artificial. When a country relies very much on eggs, it can also have very bad experiences in the future, because if all your education projects as a government are depending on egg, and then the egg is changing from one year to another, you can have a big difficulty. So I think that the egg must be thought as a transition, and the focus on the trade issue, I think, must be much more important than they used to be, because there are even people that say that egg is sometimes very negative, and in some way they are right, of course. And sometimes it's just to promote such and such kinds of interests. So I think it's a very tricky point. But what I think is also in this broader point of view, that the Portuguese government is having a strategic that is very much in the way you focus it here. So even if the last years and even the last decade had not been so big, I think that things are changing, and the will is there to change it very, very quickly. And thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give the floor to Mr. Verhagen.
Very much. I apologize for being late. It's my error, my fault, and I had not the pleasure to hear all that you have said. But the last words were sufficient for me to recognize that, of course, yes, we are in a turning point in that matter. And finally, I will say, finally, after so many years of doing mistakes in Africa. In Africa, because it's the continent that the Portuguese know better. Of course, the problems are everywhere the same. But I would like only to emphasize that the question of the relationship between the rich countries and the countries, the developed countries, the developed countries, continues to use a double standard discourse, double standard speech. Because, of course, development of these countries depends mainly on our position to open our markets. And we are renitent, and this to say the least, to do this. And then we speak of the 0.7% and so on and so on. But I think the most important thing would be to have the courage of initiating a process of accepting that these peoples must be helped in their conditions to access to our markets. But I would like also to hear your comments on a discussion that has been in the papers and in the university communities about this. The poor countries are many times accused, many of them, not the poorest of the poor, many of them of using the social dumping. Because, of course, we know that many factories, and I don't speak of China now, I speak of other countries, like the Mediterranean countries, North Africa, or the southeastern countries, South Asia countries, or such countries, which have some investments coming from the rich countries that use, of course, cheap labor. Labor relations that are very poor, from all the social benefits compared with, of course, the social benefits that we have in Europe and in the United States and in the rich countries. And political leaders, and I am very open because these political leaders came mainly from the left side of the spectrum, which puts me in a very singular position, criticized this. Oh, see the salaries in South Bengal. The poor girls have a salary of $1 per day or something like that. But there are other people that say that before that, they had no dollar at all. Before that thing, before that investment, they have nothing at all. Unless, of course, a plot of land where they have some things to eat, some two or three pigs, something like that. But they have no opportunity to labor in an industry or in something, agriculture, but that is paid by a multinational or something like that. And I am divided on that, on that discussion, because I must accept that, of course, the labor conditions are very poor and very bad. And there is, to speak very clear, an exploitation of these people. And on the other side, We see that in any case, their conditions have improved. I would like you to comment on this, because of course, by your position, you have thought about this, certainly, and perhaps with your help, I could form an opinion, a more firm opinion on that thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I would like to add two more questions for you to comment. As you know, between 1995 and 2003, 65% of our corporations were built of one. Do you think it's important to have multilateral cooperation in a way that could be the majority of those corporations, or you intend that bilateral cooperation is more wise to fulfill our development goals? And the other thing is, when we speak about the MDGs, we speak about states. But I have another idea of financial institutions and also the civil society. How to link those institutions, financial ones and civil society, within the framework of coherence and coordination that is needed. So I give you the floor.
Very broad range of questions. Let me take them in the order that Madam and continue. I think we fully agreed on basically everything. I just wanted to say, because I forgot to say, that I fully appreciate that actually Portugal made the transition from recipient to donor, 10, 15 years ago, and that from this perspective, actually I'm delighted to see so many people committed and, you know, having made that transition. When I make speeches among your citizens here in Portugal, I feel it's a little bit of a problem still. And I really admire your political courage to, you know, as representatives of these people who still are somewhere in between the transition, to say, no, no, we are now the other side, we have to do this, we have to become donors. I just want to say, forgot to say that, how much I appreciate that. Of course I understand the language point, and I'm not sure how to phrase this, but when I make speeches in the French or British Parliament, I always attack them for this point, actually, because I always say, it looks like you care a lot about babies dying, particularly when they grow up to speak French or English. Because a lot of their money goes to countries that are not that poor. Now, one way or another, let's not discuss how it comes, except for Brazil. I mean, the Portuguese are the poorest. So your geopolitics, in a way, totally coincides with what is perfect for your development focus. So let's not discuss it. Just, you know, be happy it is. But I'm not sure if you meant this as a defense for the scholarships. Okay. Then I would feel that we are sort of, I think we agree on everything. I also appreciate the point you made about the trade issue. I have been an ambassador to the WTO for my country during the time of the Singapore round, and in government, I've always understood that as opposed to the way we look at Southern Europe, Portugal is not Southern European at all in terms of trade and particularly agriculture issues. And I've seen you've been a big ally with those that wanted to reform. The point is, it's still important to make that point all the time, because you want your government to speak out. You know, when you go to international meetings, you give priorities to a limited number of issues. I often thought it would be wonderful if Portugal, who is on the right side of the debate here, would speak out a little bit more noisy, loud and clear on this, to make that point. But on content, we fully agree, but it's not been always a priority for this country to speak out on this issue. So it would be helpful if that would be the case. So I think we fully agree on this. Mr. Girardin, the reason that I'm here today is because of this ILO conference, which takes place in Lisbon. I'm also a member of the Commission on the Social Impact of Globalization. And you understand that when we had this commission meeting, this was a very large part of our debate, because there's a very strong union representation there, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that the commission came out with a fairly clear sort of consensus on this. Some labor standards are absolute. People have to have the right to organize. Child labor below 12 or 13 years is intolerable. But in terms of wages, of course wages are lower in poor countries. And that's not unfair competition. That's not social dumping. These countries will never be able to develop unless we have give them a fair chance. And I fully agree with you that if you look where these people, what the alternatives are of people there, and they work in labor standards that you and I would never want to work in. But for them, it's a tremendous improvement. Even for women in the export zone in Asia, you know, where they are in the textile factory, these are labor standards are awful, but, I mean, in terms of the hours they have to work and the wages they get, but the alternative, these are women from rural areas, which the alternative would have been selling their bodies. So for them, it's the first time they have cash income. It is women empowering these jobs. So we have to be very careful. I personally hate the word social dumping, because it's way too much used by the type of American unions who are just plain protectionists, and we have to have a serious nuance about it. So we have to be absolute about certain things, child labor, the right to organize, but wage differences are part and parcel of the development, underdevelopment debate, so we can't discriminate because of that. Now, frankly, on the international financial institutions, I think they're getting more and more on board. You're talking about the World Bank and the IMF. I'm so happy. I shouldn't say this as a UN official, but the recent change in leadership in both of them, I think, is a huge step forward of translating their lip service, because they had made paying lip service to the Millennium Development Goals in a clear focus on poverty reduction. And I think that they are actually a helpful part of becoming of the donor community, and I certainly would very much support an increased allocation to AIDA by this country. You know, I really think that is a very good way now to actually spend your money, particularly if you take care that your representative on the board of the bank ensures that continuously in all the country programs of AIDA, because you have a deputy executive director there. The problem in this country is that that person is not reporting to development, the development secretary, which is a little battle that I advise you to take upon you next time around. In the Netherlands, of course, the development is in charge of the World Bank, same in Germany and the United Kingdom. So it's a bit weird that the development institution in this country isn't now on the development ministry. But okay, it happens. So I'm very much in civil society. I personally think that the biggest role of civil society in the South should be holding their governments to account, and that our civil society should not be charity-type building a school there with the same, you know, not sustainable results as if bilaterals do it, but should empower people to demand from their governments that they take care of basic education. And the main campaigns in the South, in developing countries, are doing exactly that. Because there's only going to be sustainable education and health in these countries if the governments do their basic job, which is taking care of them. So we should not let these governments off the hook by having foreigners taking over. So I'm personally always say to the charity type of civil societies, you know, if you want to raise funds, okay, but it's not really helpful. Raise voices, not funds. You can never compensate for lack of government action, neither government there nor government here. So, and that's, I think that should be very much the role. And you know how desperately needed it is in Africa to strengthen civil society to hold their government to account. Although I must say, over the last 10 years, more happened than in the century before. I mean, the thriving civil society today in Mozambique and elsewhere is, of course, a tremendous breakthrough. But still not enough. Multilateral versus bilateral. When I became a minister of the Netherlands, my position was just let's close all bilateral aid. Just put an end to it. Because in the end of the day, it's an inferior sort of aid unless you have a tremendously capable outfit, which we don't have, you don't have. The only country that really has a professional outfit are the British. It is the best outfit around, I think. And instead of each of us building our little bilateral outfits, let's just try to make the multilateral system work. But of course, you know, this doesn't fly in a national political domestic situation. So the best way to find a compromise is, and I think your government has been helpful in getting this done, is getting way more working together among donors. Let's have a division of labor. Let each of us, depending on our budget, do two or three countries. And within these countries, one or two sectors. Why doesn't... Okay, Portugal is already focusing on a very limited number of countries. Within these countries, try to find out what is your real comparative advantage. You know, for instance, in the Netherlands, I think we could be fairly good in tropical agriculture. But let them drop all the other sectors. You might want to do education, but just let's, starting in the EU, say, okay, Portugal does these four countries and it's going to be the lead donor in the education sector. Drop all everything else. But again, you know, the political realities is, in debate with Parliament, it's very hard for a minister to say we only have one thing we're doing because there are four or five other subjects always coming up. But it would be so much better if we just would do it that way. You know, just realize that you're not the only donor around. There's a tremendous field of players. Let's go for division of labor. It still allows you a little bit of identification between the taxpayer, what's the result there, but it will make the system less chaotic, the aid architecture. So that's, I think, and in your case, where EPAS really has to be built up from basically scratch, it would be a tremendous way to do it, to just say, okay, we're going to be the best in the world in this one sector, just the best in the world. And then you're going to be the lead donor in that sector, in these four countries. And it should be feasible in your case. Or is this too radical? I'm sure parliamentarians come up like I would, but gender, but health, but AIDS, but etc. But let's get together. We have so many donors. Why can't we have a division of labor? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. As you know, you are in the month particularly important. It's the month of the budget. So I hope you can raise our voices and joining our voices with your voice as a special envoy of the Secretary General. So thank you very much, and I hope you can fly away and drive suggestively for other parts of the world with a driver or non-driver, with the other no guy. Thank you very much.